Warning. Critique Revolve contains adult language and discussions. If you're easily offended, do not continue to listen.
First of all, there's no backstabbing going on here.
It's time for me to move on.
This will be Phil's last year as the coach of the Bulls.
Are the expectations way too high?
Where do we go from here?
The only question, how long can it last?
What is up, everybody? It is time for a very, very, very special Critique Revolve on The Last Dance. We are actually talking sports for the first time for a whole show. I am going to be leading this chaos. I am the one and only Bobby D. And with me in the studio is Brian, Tony, and David.
Whoa, what's up?
Hey, everybody.
This is like, this is weird territory we're getting into.
Yeah, I know. Like, I put this out there in our little group page, and I was wondering who was going to jump on it. And I had ideas that it would be you guys. But I wasn't sure. You know, I went to Mike and I was like, look, The Last Dance is basically my childhood. And I think everybody's childhood in here or some kind of, you know, in our, we're all in the same age range.
Right.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. No, I mean, I think, what is it? Who's the youngest in here?
I'm 40.
I'm 40.
So yeah. I'm the youngest in the room. That never happens, especially not on this network. I am never the youngest. So it's what, I'm 38. And I was literally getting into like middle school basketball and high school basketball when the whole thing with Jordan and the three-peat twice.
Yeah.
Like, Jesus.
Well, and you guys can tell me. And again, if you guys don't know, The Last Dance is basically the last season of the Bulls, this documentary that's going on ESPN. It's a 10-part documentary. We are going to be breaking down the first four episodes now because that's all we've seen. And then when it's done, we will come back and do it all over again. Because this thing is an amazing, they bumped it up. It was supposed to be out, I believe, in June or July after the finals. But the fact is that nothing is going on right now due to, you know, all the quarantine bullshit. And so ESPN and Disney said, you know what? We got to make money somehow. And we can't keep watching MLB players play the show.
So they basically like,
dude, that's almost as bad as like watching those fucking NASCAR races.
Yeah, the iRaces and everything.
But they're funny to listen to.
You know what? Well, I will say best part of the NASCAR races is that idiot that got himself suspended.
Yeah, he lost all his sponsorship.
All his sponsors are gone. He killed himself over the N-word.
Yeah.
Like, yeah, buddy, good job.
Way to go.
Way to go, idiot.
Millions of dollars blown on a video game.
Right.
Did ESPN or Netflix have to, like, get permission to Michael Jordan even to release it early?
The thing was, I believe that Michael Jordan had certain rules that were going to be, that needed to be followed, of course, because Jordan rules have always happened.
This entire documentary series really was dependent on only one person.
Yeah, because
Michael Jordan.
It's the only person you want to hear from.
Yeah,
because it's not like Rodman or Pippen or any of the other people that we've seen so far.
Not even the league, not even the NBA league could even say anything.
Yeah,
well, you guys have to remember though that Jordan is one of the very few players that owns his likeness.
Yes,
yes.
And he is not part of the NBA Players Union. He's not part of the Players Association. That he's got nothing to do with it. So anything that the NBA owns, they don't own anything that has Jordan in it.
Jordan.
Yeah. I mean, right now there's actually a lawsuit against Panini because there were two cards released in like 2007 or 2008 that contained Michael Jordan in the picture.
In the background?
In the background. And so Upper Deck, who owns all of the rights to Jordan's likeness on basketball cards or signatures, is suing Panini because Jordan is the only player. It's Jordan and
Ewing.
Jordan and Ewing are the only two that said, no, we own our own likeness. They did not go into that collective bargaining agreement with the rest of the players and everything else. And so anytime they talk about who has the rights to produce certain NBA things, Jordan is never part of that.
Yeah.
And this was just a great, you know, fortunate idea that happened. You know, I know that, you know, it sounded like they approached Jordan because they knew it was going to be sort of like their last season. They said, let's document this entire thing. And it was sitting on a shelf
Because he owned it.
Because he owned it. Because it's like said, oh, this is great stuff. And he was persuaded so many times
over the years. Actually, most of the time, nobody even got into the room. It had to be the right person. And I think the anecdote that went along with this whole thing was the guy that does the director. Bob, help me out here. I can't think of his name.
Keep going. I'll look it up.
All right, sure. So the director that's doing this, the original pitch, he had the idea and he called Michael's people. Michael's people then were talking to Michael and they were like, and Mike said, wait, is that the guy that did the Iverson documentary? And they were like, yeah. And he goes, oh shit, I love that little guy. And that's literally how this happened, was the guy did the AI documentary, which by the way,
Jason Heyer.
Awesome. It's awesome. That AI documentary was absolutely phenomenal.
So you needed to get his attention first, right, before you even got it into a conversation.
Jordan. He doesn't need the money.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. You're dealing with a guy now that it's always about, I want to be the best at whatever I do. And I think they showed that through these first four episodes that this man was going. And like you said, this was his camera crew following him around. So this wasn't like a big ploy. This wasn't a Dwayne Wade fake Last Dance to where he went around and did it all on his own type bullshit because he was trying to, you know, monopolize on it or, you know, monetize it. This was Michael just being Michael, you know, wanting to film all these different things. Now, for me, we'll start getting into the episodes here. Now, those first two episodes I found were very slow. Like, this wasn't anything that I expected it to be because I thought it was going to be day one to, you know, game 92 or whatever it ended up being.
Very linear.
Yeah, yes.
And very much like, okay, this is how the season started. This was what he did in the preseason. Yeah. This is what they did during the season. And so like you got 10 episodes, figure what each one's going to be. Like the first episode will be the preseason. The second one will be
we're
like
going to get into the offseason, all that stuff. Right. Yeah,
It was slow, but it followed
like any other sports documentary.
I actually wouldn't call this slow.
But it was stuff that we knew.
Right. And I think that's the problem. We all lived it. Right. We all lived it. So those first two episodes was a setup that we didn't need.
The first episode was extremely important because it really cemented or basically confirmed what a lot of people knew that was going on. And that basically the thing that stuck out for me in the first episode was the admittance that Jerry Krause, it was his idea to basically.
Wasn't a surprise, guys. Like that was, everyone knew that Krause.
Everyone knew it. Yeah.
But I think what Krause made himself the villain.
Yeah.
But I think what you're getting to, Brian, is the fact that the first two episodes were so important because it was for today's audience.
Well, and that's exactly right. Is that
all of us knew it.
We knew
it. But I think the point is that, you know, back then, at least there was a lot of question of who could beat the Bulls. The Bulls could beat the Bulls.
Well,
and then the Bulls can basically, they could have gone on. If Jerry Krause would have at least stayed, you know, stayed a little bit more humble, they could have won a couple more championships after this one.
Well, and actually I disagree with that, but that's for another story.
Yeah.
That's a whole nother thing because if you look at the first three-peat and the second three-peat, very different teams. Very different structures for the teams. And what happened in the 2 years when Jordan went, well, the 18 months that Jordan went and played baseball. Right. Yeah. For whatever reason. And there's a ton of documentaries out there about that, too, guys.
It could have been a Oakland A.
But the bottom line is this dynasty was ending basically because of
the front
egos.
Yeah.
Egos.
Well, and I mean, so they've here's the thing. The documentary that we're watching currently, The Last Dance, did a very good job of framing it as if the dead guy is 100% at fault.
Yeah.
Okay. Like,
that was wrong.
So here's my thing about that. Like, yes, Krause did say those things.
Yes.
Right. Like there's
it's documented out
from back in the day. Yeah. There's interviews with Krause where he said things, but at the same time, you have to remember too, that you have an aging roster, right? You have a team that is going to be ridiculously expensive to keep together. Because Pippen's going to have to get paid.
And Pippen and Jordan were cheap back in the day. Because I remember when Jordan even was only getting like $3 million because he didn't give a shit because he was getting so much off endorsements.
He wanted 36 million.
Well, and that's exactly right. And so then you had Pippen who was playing on what, an $7 million contract or an $18 million contract?
Over 7 years,
Which is fuck all insane. Yeah. That would literally be like fucking, what, Kevin Durant signing a fucking $10 million contract for 8 years.
I forgot some of the names that they named currently, like at Pippen at the 100. 122 highest paid player at that time, who that would be today.
Right. And it's, it's like fucking Jeremy Lin, who's in China.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
It's insane. Like, if you look at it, like what Pippen was making that last year of that deal never would happen now.
I think it's
the way that team was built never would happen now. If you look at the Krause, honestly, for all of the shit you give Krause, he built those teams from the ground up through drafting and through smart acquisitions, like the Dennis Rodman pickup, which everybody talked shit about at the time, how he wasn't going to fit in, how he's a troublemaker, how it's not going to work. Well, so yeah, he let him go on vacation, whatever. Like, it was fine though. Like, and that's the whole thing is that, you know, that I don't know.
Man, I never really understood.
Looking at it as Krause is the bad guy, I think is the wrong way to
do it. I never really understood why, to begin with, Krause said out loud publicly that this was going to be Phil Jackson's last year. But also what I saw in the episode that really was ballsy on top of that was that he actually was grooming a guy to take over for Phil Jackson while Phil Jackson was still coaching. I forgot all about that Tim Floyd guy.
Coaches in waiting have been around for the longest time.
Phil Jackson
was technically a coach in waiting for Doug Collins.
Right, exactly. It was Doug Collins, and then he groomed, and then Jerry Krause groomed Phil.
Yeah.
And then Jerry Krause groomed Tim Floyd. That is what he did.
But what he did also was like basically get he basically pushed or did not allow Phil Jackson to become part of the process.
Well, because at the time, that's not what coaches did. Coaches weren't. That was why it's such a big deal when Don Nelson took over in Golden State and was also then in charge of personnel.
Yeah. He could
it
have
was a huge deal. That happens all the time in baseball. It happens all the time in football. That was not a thing in basketball, period.
But then he would have known at least then that if, it was Michael saying that he wasn't going to play for any other coach. If that was the case, then he said, fuck you, Krause. I'm going to go ahead and, like, if you go ahead and push Phil Jackson out the door, I'm out of here. That was basically, in a sort of way also, that may be also what Jerry Krause wanted, definitely.
So, you got to remember the structure of documentaries, that you have to have a good side and a bad side. And so what always makes it good is to have a villain that they could have. They had footage of Pippen and everybody else just ranking on him all the time. To where, you know, those warm-ups where Jordan's just giving him shit.
Right.
Pippen yelling at him on the
bus.
But that's what makes these things good. You don't always want the sunny side of things. You have to have a villain that somebody that comes on the screen that you look at and you're like, that's the asshole that fucked it all up. Yeah.
Yeah, no, you're absolutely right. And I think that, once again, because Krause is dead, it makes it super easy to make him the villain.
You know?
Now, granted, I'm not saying that he wasn't the reason that the team didn't stay together, because maybe he was, maybe he wasn't.
Yeah.
I don't know. Who's saying that, you know, I understand that Krause was the general manager, right? But he was not the owner. The owner set salary.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And here's the thing. When you're looking down the barrel of a gun and you've got Michael Jordan wanting $38 million, you've got Pippen knowing that he needs to get paid.
Yeah.
After making literal pennies on the, he was playing for fucking peanuts.
Yeah.
Right. And then you've got Rodman, who has now, 4 years in a row been the rebounding champion? Dude, and defensive player of the year, perennial all-star. Like, Rodman needs to get paid to, Boardman gets paid, right?
Yeah.
So if you look at that, you just look at just those three guys. It's not like it is now where you can have that super team in Golden State or that super team down in Miami and then fill the roster with a bunch of dudes playing for the
salary
minimum.
The salary cap was much different. Far less than what today's game is.
And there's a reason that there was a strike.
Yeah, to get that money, because to get Jordan money made the NBA what it is today.
Exactly.
Good, bad, or indifferent. Those ratings, the promotions, everything that came along with this team has created the NBA that we see today. The money structure, you know, the players getting paid, everything has come off of this, because it wasn't a $1 billion franchise before then. It was one of those things that, okay.
This was a sorry-ass franchise before.
You had two teams.
Two teams, Lakers and the Celtics.
And that was it. You had no one else. And because remember, in the 70s and the early 80s, the NBA was nothing.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
The NBA was nothing. Now, Magic versus Bird, I would actually say that that whole thing kicked off the NBA because of what happened in the NCAA tournament.
Yeah.
Those two guys facing off against each other was the biggest game ever. And that includes NBA games, because television was starting to come into its own and sports were coming into their own really in the country. Because remember, up until this point, guys, baseball was king.
Now, we talked a little about the television there. Now, yeah. I don't know how it was for you guys, but growing up, there were certain teams that I liked because they were on the super stations that showed up on television.
Yes.
And that's why I became such a big Bulls fan, because every
WGN,
Bulls
baby.
Home Same game here, was, yeah. was on WGN.
WGN.
Now, so for me, Bob, I'm from Indiana, which is like, you know, the birthplace of basketball. Yeah. It's actually the birthplace of the NBA. The Detroit Pistons used to be the Fort Wayne Zollner Pistons and were one of the original teams in the NBA. Actually, Fred Zollner is the guy that started the NBA at his kitchen table in Fort Wayne, Indiana. Okay? Just a little trivia for you guys. But so I grew up literally inundated with basketball.
Mm-hmm.
I was never a Pacers fan.
Yeah.
I fucking hated Reggie Miller from the minute I saw his weaselly little face. I was always a Bulls fan. I was always a Bulls fan. Yeah. I was always a Cubs fan because we didn't have.
It was true, I think, for like.
Well, that's what you
like,
watched, WGN, because like, the Pacers games weren't on TV. They were blacked out.
For me, it was either like any Chicago team, the Cubs, the Bulls, were covered a lot by WGN.
And White Sox showed up every once in a while.
Or you watched the Braves on TBS.
Yes.
The Braves and the
Hawks.
That's right. The Hawks were on TBS, and you could also see them as well.
Right.
So
that was it, and
I think that's lost on today. Like, again, these first two episodes were put together, like, according to ESPN, for the 16-year-olds that had no fucking clue who Michael Jordan was.
Which is insane that you wouldn't know who the fuck Michael Jordan is.
You know what's even more crazy? You know, like Brian even says, you know, like, that the Bird and Magic kicked off the NBA craze being televised. Before that, the NBA finals were never televised live.
Never.
Right.
They were all televised tape delay. That's how much television looked at the NBA.
Yeah, no one gave a shit about, well, because remember, too, the NBA, it was one of the last things to be integrated. It was, you know, and during the 70s especially, there was a big pushback against people of color playing in the NBA.
Yeah.
And it wasn't, you know, white middle America sport.
Yeah.
Like, and then Bird and Magic showed up.
And well, it was Bird.
Yeah.
It was Bird from French Lick, Indiana, fucking Hills Country. Oh, good God. Been there once, never going back. but no, Bird kind of brought it into the middle America.
Middle America.
And then with Jordan going to Chicago. That was huge.
Yeah.
That was huge.
Well, and I think they got that right in the first kind of episode. They gave you a background of what the Bulls were,
right.
You know, and again, it was weird for me, I thought the whole setup was just going to be this season. Me going in as the all knowing fucking Bulls guy. I'm like, look, I just want to see the behind the scenes shit.
Right.
Like, I don't need to know that they sucked beforehand, that Oakley was his, you know, his protector, you know, and going back to him being in high school and everything else. I'm like, are we doing a 30 on 30 on Jordan? Or are we talking about the Bulls?
Right.
And that was my initial like response to it, and I understand the whole like we're not doing it for me, we're doing it for the vast audience.
Mm-hmm.
Now what I think you saw there that you will never see again, and that what is missing from the NBA is the passion that somebody had towards the game, that they started this off by going to Paris and playing this preseason thing, and Jordan wanted that championship more than anybody.
Right. Yeah.
Oh yeah.
He wanted a fucking preseason bullshit. Doesn't even matter.
Some McDonald's bullshit tournament.
Right. That was literally to make the NBA a global thing. And at this point it had become, but, and I mean, now of course it's super huge in China and everywhere else, you know. Now you have the Euro leagues that didn't exist.
Yeah.
Because remember, the reason the Dream Team won so handily in 92.
Because
no one else had a team.
Yeah.
Like, they literally threw together a team. They were used to playing our college guys. They never had to play our pros in the Olympics, right? And our college guys, like, yeah, okay, great.
Yeah.
Whatever. They're fine. You know, but it was literally like guys that like didn't get drafted. And at that point, I think the NBA draft was 5 rounds long.
Yeah.
So, you know, you're looking at quite a few dudes. You're like, how the fuck did that even happen?
But the fact is, like, this man, the greatest player in the world, after winning a championship, just wanted to go push some fucking European player's shit in.
Right. Like, why? You have nothing to prove anyone.
Yeah.
And that's the thing about Jordan. I think
that drive, man.
I mean, everyone constantly compares Jordan to all the other great players today. You know, is it Jordan or LeBron? But the one defining thing about Jordan is that drive.
He was always even like that in Carolina.
Yeah,
like as a freshman. As a freshman, he after practice he went after James Worthy, who was the senior captain on that Tar Heel team.
Yep. That was the one takeaway for me in the first yeah, episode. Jordan was afraid that basically people will not understand his drive.
Well, that was why he was. That's why he waited so long.
He waited so long,
30 years to put out the documentary. Yeah.
Well, and the thing was, I think the most telling thing was James Worthy, you know, being all 55 years old of him now going, yeah, I was better than Michael Jordan for about a week and a half.
Right. Well, I mean, that's the thing. I think the thing that gets people lose, and especially the younger generation, even people my age, is that we didn't get to see Jordan. Young Jordan.
Yeah.
You know, and so when I'm watching, even watching this documentary, the thing that blows me away is how young he looks.
Yeah.
Playing in North Carolina or those first couple of years for the Bulls.
Even the way he spoke.
Right? Like, where he sounded like
like a little kid and like everything has evolved with this man.
Well, and it's just so crazy to me just to see the growth because you got to think, guys, I was born in 81. So that first round of championships, I was like 11.
Yeah.
I don't know, man. I didn't care. You know, I'll be honest. I didn't give a shit. I was still watching Cubs baseball. Thank you, Andre Dawson. Like, that was what I cared about.
Yeah.
Right? I remember watching Joe Carter hit a walk-off home run in game fucking six of the World Series or whatever it was for the Blue Jays. That's what I remember because I was a big baseball guy. It wasn't until I got to middle school that basketball kind of popped up to my radar. And really, it was because of Glenn Robinson at Purdue. Because I was I'm still a huge Purdue University guy, right? And G-Rob at Purdue, you know, big dog. That dude really kind of threw me into watching NBA basketball. So I missed the first round of championships. You know, Robinson was drafted after the 93-94 season. So what I got to see was the Houston Rockets win it twice.
Yeah.
Right? So, because Jordan retired.
Yeah.
Quote unquote.
Yeah.
So, you know, they did do a good job in those first two episodes. Basically, the first one was setting up Jordan and his history, and the second one was going to Pippen, which I did not know that much about Scottie Pippen.
I knew nothing about Scottie Pippen.
So to see those kind of like old school, you know, small college, again, something you hardly ever see in this day and age, you know, guy come up out of nowhere, you know, get drafted by the Sonics, and then the Bulls traded for him right on draft day. You know, and just to see that how he's brought up and to get some of his background.
He got his due. He got his due in that episode.
Oh, absolutely. Which, I think
honestly, as you grew up, Brian, when the Bulls hit their prime.
Well,
right?
The second three-peat.
Yeah, the second three-peat. The first three-peat for me, I always was a fan of that team because Scottie Pippen was the most underrated player on the floor.
Well, and I'll be honest with you, I didn't realize how underrated Scottie Pippen was. Until I actually started digging into it a little bit. Because once again, like I said, guys, I wasn't even 16 years old.
Well, also, but, back in the day, we didn't have the information that we have now.
We didn't have we had the internet, kind of.
Yeah.
Like FTP sites, you know, for porn. But
yeah, we were doing picture trading. We're not looking at
exactly. We're like
sports dot, you know.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Dude, you're printing shit out on a dot matrix printer, and then that piece of paper gets real weird, right? Mm-hmm. But anyway, you didn't have these documentaries that we have now. You didn't have a 24-hour news cycle. You didn't have... I remember it was a big deal. Their
analytics wasn't a thing.
But I remember it being a big deal when Rodman went to Vegas. I remember that.
Yes.
I didn't realize that Pippen sat out because he was angry about his contract.
Yes.
I didn't know that.
Yeah.
Not until I watched... So the documentary for the Pippen stuff was huge for me.
Yeah. I didn't realize he was that... Like, he was paid.
That lowly paid?
Yeah. And that he was worried that, you know, again... I can't hate on him for saying, look, I came from fucking Podunk and I need
12 brothers and sisters.
Yeah, I need to support my family.
One of his brothers is in a fucking wheelchair.
Yeah. And so I need to be able to support them. Like, I completely understood why he took that $18 million.
Right. And that was when contracts were guaranteed with injury. Like, you know, and so it was.
Yeah. The story was Jerry Reinsdorf, the owner of the Bulls, said, once you sign a contract, I don't want to see you ever again. Don't even bother.
Which, could you imagine that now?
Yeah.
Oh, it would never happen.
Jesus.
It never happened.
Well, I mean, now I will say this though. The one thing that I do still bothers me about both football and basketball when it comes to contracts, especially those rookie deals, is that there is no arbitration.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that baseball has the right idea with arbitration, but what a fucked up idea service time is. Like, so it's like one of those like double-edged kind of swords.
Well, because some background on the NBA, they call them what, the bird rules?
Yes, the Bird rules are the free agent rules.
Yes, and so like if you stay with a team a certain amount of period of time, they can offer you a supermax contract. But if you were to leave that team, you can go over else, and it won't affect the salary cap. There's weird rules in NBA that doesn't apply to anywhere else. Well, but absolutely. None of those were kind of really in place like they are today. Like everybody's like, well, if I stay another year with this team, I can sign, or they can trade me in the middle of the year, and then I can sign with that next team for the supermax.
Right. Well, because the supermax contract came about after that last collective bargaining agreement, and especially all the weird ass rules that happened there. And there's been such an explosion on the salary cap number. Absolutely asinine.
Yeah.
Looking at what their cap is at now. Holy crap. Could you imagine being like the 92 Bulls going,
when the 10th player off the bench is getting more than basically everybody but Jordan at that time.
That's the thing. Like what's the minimum contract now? The minimum veteran contract now is absolutely insane. Yeah. Now I will also say this though. The one thing that Glenn Robinson did do was he was the last rookie to sign a $100 million contract because of his 10-year, $102 million deal that he held out all of training camp for and cost himself Rookie of the Year. But that's for another podcast.
Yeah.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. I'll blow Glenn Robinson later. But no, I think that the thing about this documentary is that I think we all had an idea of what it was going to be going into it. Right? Bobby, you, of course, thought it was just going to be the behind-the-scenes of the season, which reading all of the pre- stuff about it, that's what I thought too.
Well, I was always confused about that Priest stuff because it's like, what the fuck does Justin Timberlake have to do with this? He's fucking 20 years younger than I am. You know, and they're showing like, you know, stuff like that. I was like, why are we showing these people?
Well, and I think it's one of those things where they wanted this to be almost like a global phenomenon.
Yeah.
And so they needed to bring in children to watch it. And I say children meaning anyone younger than me. So you know, because if you look at it like people that weren't into sports when they were kids at our age don't know shit about Jordan.
No.
You know that he's considered one of the greatest of all time. Mm-hmm. But you didn't have the news cycles that we have now where everybody knows LeBron.
Well, yeah.
Because
yeah.
they're constantly inundated embarded, with his flopping.
By it.
And, his Instagram. And everything.
You know, all of that shit. Although I will say this too. If the Bulls back in the day had Instagram,
we would not know.
Oh my God, dude.
We would have known about the Coke Hotel before.
Right? The Coke Hotel. What's his name? The rookie. Scotty Burrell. Yeah. Oh, buddy.
And not even Rodman. I mean, Rodman on Instagram. Alone.
Well, I just remember how big of a deal it was every time Rodman did anything that came out, like the wedding dress, Madonna stuff, the naked photos. Like, it was always such a huge deal. And now there's fucking naked dudes in every episode or every fucking SI swimsuit cover.
Yeah.
Yes.
Right. It's so different.
So, you know, back to that second episode there, you know, what we did see was kind of the rise of Jordan and then the injury that put him back.
Right.
Again, which that was too young for me to understand. Yeah. And you get a lot of the background. Now, what I thought was interesting that came out of there that I didn't know and would never fucking happen today was him going to North Carolina, playing 5-on-5 fucking basketball on his own and coming back to the team going, I'm ready. You're going to fucking play me. And to find out that his minutes were limited and that he ended up getting them in the playoffs, all that shit, like I knew, but they opened it up like this whole like world to me of like, look how this guy was fucking the drive that we've talked about that you would never see today. Could you imagine like LeBron James went back to, you know,
Akron, Ohio. Akron, like he didn't go to fucking college, man.
It just adds to the myth. That's the thing. All these true stories, which is scary
though about Jordan. That's the thing is that this guy, he is a mythological figure.
Mythological figure.
But it's all fucking true.
Yeah.
It's like if fucking Hercules came down and was real. You're just like, what the fuck? Like, this is not a real, no one has that kind of drive.
Like, a lot of people, I always remember the story that always put Jordan over was he played the finals with that flu-like illness.
Was it 38 points with the flu?
38 points with the flu.
Growing up in halftime.
And that added to his legend. The second episode, I'm like going, well, this is just the cherry on top. This shows how freaking mad this guy was, like.
I love the fact that there's a 10% chance that you could fuck up your foot and end your career.
And he's like, okay.
He's like, yeah, okay.
There's a 90% chance that I won't, so why am I not playing?
Well, and that's the thing is, like, now it's like if there's a 1% chance that they might fuck up their career, they sit for a year. They sit for a year, except for, and I will give Kevin Durant this. Durant came back and fucked himself up again.
Yes.
And you know what, dude? Good for you. Well, good for you, because it was a freak thing that never should have happened. But that's that 10% that Jordan was talking
exactly.
about.
Exactly. But the fact is, back in the day, they would have been like, we're not going to win the title. Or today.
Right.
Take the Sixers, for example. The process. We're not going to win the title. You know what, Ben Simmons? Embiid, you guys just sit out for a fucking year. Fuck it.
Right? Exactly. Like, we have no chance to win the title. Don't play. What?
Yeah.
What? I mean, as an athlete, I couldn't imagine how you could do that. You know, or it's if you look at like
it's just a competitor in anything.
Well, that's what I mean. Like,
you know, I mean, it has
football.
Not...
Everything is like that now, though. Yeah, every sport is like that. Oh, I might fuck up my career. Oh, Tommy John surgery. I need to be out for 24 months.
Yeah, right? Nobody pushes the envelope like we saw in that second episode.
Or like, honestly, like sports guys used to in the 90s and early 2000s. Look, Curt Schilling with the bloody sock game. You know, John Smoltz and Tom Glavine both coming back from like reparative surgeries in less than a month or 2 months or whatever. I mean, it's insane. Nowadays, a guy gets hurt, he's done.
Yeah.
It could be the third game of the year. He's not playing again.
Yeah.
It's crazy. I mean, and once again, I'll give it also to Ohtani out there for the Angels.
Yeah. Yeah.
He could be sitting right now, but he didn't.
Yeah, I can still hit, so what the fuck?
I can still hit, let me hit, you know, and good for you, dude. And those are the guys, I think those are the guys that you kind of have to, they're almost a throwback.
They're a throwback to
the way it was when we were kids. Now, granted, I also understand that it might fuck up my whole career, and this is millions and millions and millions of dollars. So I understand both sides of it, but as a fan, fuck you for sitting.
Yeah, exactly.
But as a business person, smart decision. You know, and so it's tough. It's one of those things where you have to kind of weigh the pros and the cons. And Jordan, of course, as the competitor that he was, there were no cons to him coming back.
Exactly.
Ever. It didn't matter.
Yeah.
And that's crazy
to me. And just to watch them go back and show like, hey, there's 13 seconds left in this game. Sorry, you hit your fucking your amount of minutes. If I do this, I'm going to get fired.
Right.
Doug Collins is going to get fired if he put him back in. Right. And then he fucking willed them to the playoffs.
Right.
You know, and of course, then you see the magical 63 game against the Celtics because they took off the restrictions on him.
Right. Well, and that's the thing. I think Jordan was one of those guys that he never turned it off.
No.
Ever. Yeah, that was
he was always on. It didn't matter. Practice. Probably fucking pick up games against himself. Dude would... I only imagine how many free throws he would shoot by himself.
Yeah.
I mean, I can't fathom it.
Well, yeah. It's always one of those things. Like a lot of what I'm seeing in this thing is a lot of the stories that I heard about Kobe Bryant after he died.
Right.
That crazy drive that he would see you in there shooting and that he would shoot an extra hour just to be fucking working harder than you.
Or he'd not be the first one in on Monday. So on Tuesday, he beat you by 9 hours.
Yeah.
Like he just didn't go home.
Yeah.
Like and that's because Bryant had that drive.
That drive.
He had that gene.
Well, he
it
had,
was a gene.
It's obsession.
It's a mentality.
It's a mentality.
Right. It's a mama mentality. No, it's an obsession, is what that is, guys. It's an unhealthy obsession.
Yeah. And that's the thing. It's unhealthy.
Right. It is. It's super unhealthy. However,
we
pay you very well for it.
Like, and you'd get treated like a legend because of it.
But that's not why you do it though. And that's the thing, is that like the reason that Jordan does things, or the reason that Kobe did things, or the reason, you know, it was never about the money. It was never about the fame. It was always just to be the best always.
Yes.
It was always to just beat the next guy.
Yeah.
You know, it's like James Worthy said, I was the best for a week and a half.
Yeah.
You know, and Jordan just couldn't do it. He couldn't handle not being the best on the floor at all times, which is why it amazes me that he came and went and fucking played for Washington.
Yeah.
Well, the one thing about Jordan's story about his just really obsessive compulsive behavior was the fact that I remember after seeing the second episode, so many people start coming out telling stories about Jordan. And one of the ones that was told here pertaining to the Suns was the fact that he set up people like he would stay up 12 hours, be playing cards, and then next day have 1 hour of practice or 1 hour of sleep and still score 50 on them.
Yeah,
well, and it's insane.
I think the story that came out of I was golfing with Danny Ainge,
yes,
and I told him to let DJ know that I'm going to fuck him up,
right?
You know, and he went in and you know murdered them that game.
Well, I mean that's exactly right, and it was a game that didn't fucking matter.
Yeah,
yeah.
Like, and that's the thing. Like to Jordan, every game mattered.
Well, and again, I think that's the drive. And we talked about it always needed to be the next person or the next team that he wanted to beat. And that kind of leads into episode three, you know, where we get the background of the Bad Boys.
Right.
You know, and you get a glimpse into Rodman and everything else that was going on with him. But you also see the physicality and the mental aspects that the Pistons brought to the Bulls that they couldn't fucking handle.
Well, I mean, they were the original Hack-a-Shaq, yeah. Right? It was Hack Jordan.
Yeah, the Jordan rules.
The Jordan rules.
But it was just Hack. Well, Jordan.
It was Hack. It's the same thing that they did against Shaquille O'Neal for years, that all the teams did.
Yeah.
Because Shaq couldn't hit a fucking free throw to save his life.
Right? And they're like, hey, if Jordan couldn't get off the ground, he couldn't score, so fucking foul him.
Right? Mm-hmm. Which makes sense from and especially because they didn't call shit.
Yeah.
Back in the day, and there weren't these superstar foul rules that you have now where, you know, can't come within 8 feet of James Harden if he's shooting a three, it's a foul, right? Oh, he stuck his foot out and kicked you. You fouled him. Like, it's insane to me watching the NBA now compared to then, like the 8 steps for a travel now is what it takes. You know, Harden drives the lane. It's a Euro step. No, it's a fucking travel.
Yeah, so that episode set up like the next tier of the Bulls and going into, you know, basically the Phil Jackson era, and Doug Collins is still there trying to get them through and realizing that Jordan isn't going to be able to do it on his own. And you see Pippen and Jordan. And, you know, I was always surprised they didn't show more of like Horace Grant and everything through a lot of this so far.
Yeah, same here.
I don't know why, because that was the big three for the longest time.
That was their big three. Well, that was the big three during the first three.
But I'm just saying, even through like this whole, the whole Pistons thing, I thought we were going to get more out of that.
I thought that, you know, like the 2 years that Jordan had with the Bad Boys, his run in was almost like a, I want to say a blessing.
Well, you say 2 years, it was like four.
I mean the two play postseason runs.
The 2 years that the Pistons won it all.
Yeah.
The 2 years that they won it all. It's, you know, like, but then the Bulls were always trying to match up with them, and then they did the Jordan rules on him. I always thought to me that that's the last thing that Jordan needed in order to finally, you know, like toughen up. Hump. Yeah, toughen up, you know, like forge him into like an even cold-blooded weapon. because the third time around, he was going to go ahead and stick it up.
If you think about it, Jordan's always had this kind of like mythic anger, where it's like if you got him angry, he's going to drop 60 on you.
This is off this subject, but did you hear the Kevin Garnett Isaiah Ryder story about Kevin Garnett talking shit his rookie year to Jordan, because Isaiah Ryder put up 25 and then Jordan went and put up like 27 in the quarter and just wouldn't stop talking shit to him?
Yeah.
And Isaiah Ryder is like, hey man, telling Garnett, I told you to shut up. And he's explaining to Jordan the whole time, he's just a rookie. He don't know what he's saying. He don't know what he's saying, man. And like, if you look it up, I've seen it on YouTube and stuff. There's two different podcasts that they tell the same story and that they sync the stories together. And it's funny as shit.
Yeah, so. It's dead on.
And so the thing is though,
but just the attitude and that fire of don't get him fucking motivated. Right. It probably came out of this Bad Boys thing.
Yeah, part of it. I think that too, though, if you look at it, like the way that the NBA used to be set up was that you had like the Lakers had it first, right? With their ridiculously talented teams with the Johnson and all of that. And then the Celtics came in, right? The Celtics and the Lakers then fought each other for years throughout the 80s. And then the Celtics always stopped the Pistons, right? Then the Pistons got over the hump, right? Yes. They beat the Celtics. And this is Isaiah Thomas's whole thing, right?
Yes.
Like his whole, I'm not an asshole. You are. But that's okay. Just own it, dick. So then like they finally beat the Celtics and they get there. And then, you know, Isaiah wants to make himself feel important. So Jordan had to get through them. But it wasn't necessarily that Jordan couldn't get past the Pistons, because Jordan could absolutely get past the Pistons at any time he wanted to. He didn't have the supporting cast to do it. And it's almost like if you're looking at like Houston or Golden State now, like the way that they've kind of built their teams to beat each other.
Mm-hmm.
Like that's the new thing,
yeah.
Right? Is that you build your team to beat whoever you can't get past, which I honestly think the Bulls set that blueprint.
So that team, the Bulls team, not just Jordan, but every all of those supporting players finally had to toughen up, kick the Pistons in the ass to, in order to get to the next level.
I think Lambeer said it best when he was like, "We just got old."
Well, that happens a lot too. But the fact was, in this episode, we also see, you know, them get kicked out and then Phil is put in, and they kind of get the background of the triangle offense
and how Jordan didn't buy in at first.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And like, you don't need the ball all the time and everything else. So they've done a good job. And, you know, in this one, they set up this whole thing in this episode 3 to where Jordan says, "Congratulations, good luck to every one of the Pistons."
Right.
And it was like, you don't know it's a foreshadowing thing to the end, especially if you don't remember or you're one of these 16-year-olds that didn't realize that the Pistons eventually just walk off the fucking court when the Bulls finally beat them. But they're setting up. Reinsdorf was the first to the villain there, and now we have the Pistons as our villain.
Right.
So, you know, they are setting these things up, you know, to have the good guy and the bad guy here. And they're putting the Bulls in, you know, technically in Jordan in the best light they can. I mean, I know there's some controversy there, but there always is with any kind of.
Right. I think it's one of those things where they don't want to blatantly
blow them,
right? But they kind of are.
Yeah.
It makes sense, though.
And they get back on, like, okay, so I don't know if you've noticed, but Jordan looks to be getting more fucked up as these things go on.
Oh, you mean drunker? You mean he's just getting a little bit more tipsy?
A little more tipsy, yeah. Because like the first couple episodes,
he looked pretty straight.
He was pretty straight.
His eyes are bloodshot.
It is bloodshot. Yeah. He's got the cigar going. He's okay, like, fuck that guy.
Right when he was like, "You ain't never going to tell me that Isaiah Thomas isn't an asshole." Oh, I was like, it's like watching the Taylor Swift documentary where she starts dropping F-bombs. Yes. You're like, what is going on right now? Yeah,
because ESPN had this whole thing of like, well, we're going to let you know that there's going to be two versions of it. Right. There's going to be the cussing version and there's going to be the one where we play the clean version.
Right, which is fine. I understand that, too.
Yeah, but the thing is seeing like your childhood hero just be like, that guy was a fucking dick. Right. You're like, yeah.
Right? And like now, as like, you know, 38-year-old me is like, fuck yeah, he was. Yeah, Michael says I can cuss. Yeah. You know, but I mean, he's been essentially Michael Jordan had crafted this image of himself.
Yeah.
Right. And even through all of the controversy.
Yeah.
Right. From why did he quit for 2 years?
Yeah. The gambling, wife, the murder with his dad, the divorce, yeah. Right. You know,
even through that, Jordan still came out looking pretty fucking clean.
Clean.
He really did.
Yeah.
Like, it's not like Tiger Woods, who did not come out clean at all.
There's no mugshot.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. Jordan has no mugshot because those cops were all on the take. But
well, the weird part is, I think me and Tony could speak to this, is like during that
being
time.
On
because,
the take?
Well, no. But like when it comes to Michael Jordan, we all knew, like really in fans during that time, we all knew Jordan has a dark side.
Well, no.
All knew this.
Well, here's the thing. Everybody knew that he gambled. Like that was not.
Yeah. It was golf or cards, you know,
he gambled on fucking everything.
That he was a boozer and that he smoked cigars and you're right. Like, I mean, how does this guy?
It's funny in his rookie year when he went into the traveling Chicago cocaine circus, as they called it,
that he
knocked on the door at his teammates and he saw the weed, the women and the lines of coke. And he was like, oh my goodness. He was all when all Mormon all of a sudden. And you know, and
he like
said,
oh, geez, oh, golly, geez, guys, golly, golly. I don't know.
Yeah,
like I'm sorry, dude. That is the one time in this entire documentary.
That you, like, rolled your eyes.
I think Jordan lied like a motherfucker. I think he lied. But I think the other thing, too, on the third episode that really got me was when Jordan or when Rodman first came into the league.
Mm-hmm.
How innocent.
Well, yeah, that's
I had no idea. I thought he had always been.
I don't want to make it sound like, and I don't want to downplay. I am convinced that guy had serious mental illness
I don't think there's any question that
there was.
Well, Rodman has always said that he has depression.
Yeah, well, and he was such a small town, wanted to be a low-key guy. I mean, right. This guy.
And he's so talented.
Yeah, he didn't even want to go to college.
Right?
He was like, I can play basketball. Why don't you go to college?
Right? He's like,
you know, okay. It's like, I should have been out there selling drugs or whatever he said, you know?
Well, because, I mean, that's, he's like, well,
you're never going
to
see a player like him again, where he basically made his status and his stature in the game strictly on being a pest, defensive and just being that rebounding machine.
That's Siakam.
That's Siakam. Yeah. But if you think about it, there was a documentary.
He's never going to be like Rodman.
There was another documentary that I watched about the Bad Boy Pistons that was fantastic. It gave that insight into Rodman. It's amazing that basically Mahorn and Laimbeer were the ones who taught Rodman
right. Well,
to be what he was.
A fucking asshole.
Laimbeer was an asshole. Yeah.
Laimbeer was a hockey player in a basketball player's body. Like, flat out, Laimbeer would have been the meanest fucker out on a hockey rink any day of the week.
He's your teacher.
Well, I mean, that's insane. The other thing, too, that I didn't realize was just how basketball smart Dennis Rodman is.
Yes.
When he had the conversations about, like, when Kerr shot the ball, I knew it would spin here, and that he would have people that didn't know how to fucking
shoot. He's almost like a savant. Right. He's like a basketball savant.
Well, no, that's exactly it. It's like, I never would have thought that that's how he was so successful.
He worked as hard at his craft as Jordan did on getting stronger and being a better player.
Right.
He worked on watching a ball come off a fucking rim.
Well, and I think that's one of those things that, like, had we known when they signed Rodman, that was how he was, that it wasn't all the other shit.
Yeah.
Then everybody would have been like, oh, yeah, he's a perfect fit for these Bulls.
Well, and I mean, I knew this from the past that he would look at the ball and he would know, I can't grab that, but I can tip it.
Right. And
he would just sit there and keep tipping it until he could get it.
Right. Tipping the ball 19 times until he could fucking grab it.
Yeah, because he knew he couldn't grab it from me, but he knew he could tip it away.
Right. He knew he couldn't grab it, but he wasn't going to let you grab it either. And I mean, that was just Rodman. And that was crazy, crazy good.
Yeah. And so in episode 3 and 4 kind of focused around Rodman and what he brought to the team. And then we get the infamous, I'm going to go on a 48-hour trip. to Vegas.
I need a timeout.
Pippen's back.
Right. Yeah. He's like, I'm not number two anymore. I'm feeling a little bit left out.
I need a vacation.
I feel like Michael doesn't appreciate me enough. I'm going to take some time. Okay, Phil?
So, and he was gone for what, 90
hours?
And
he got it. He got it from Phil.
He got it from Michael. It was supposed to be 48 hours. But yeah, he was gone for 90, but he was actually in Chicago. So, like, the documentary is like Jordan went to his room and got him, right? That's because he lived across the street from the United Center.
Okay, so it wasn't into Vegas.
He didn't go to Vegas. Jordan took one of the athletic trainers. They walked across the street and knocked on his door where Carmen Electra was, because at that point, I believe they were either married or dating. And Jordan knocks on the door. He's like, come on, man. We got to go to practice. Rodman gets dressed and walks across the fucking street. It's not like Jordan chartered a jet.
Okay, so
flew to Vegas and picked up Dennis Rodman, which is how they made it sound.
They definitely made it sound that way.
That is not all how it was.
I like that entire segment where, you know, like, they were going through the process of the deciding, like Rodman asked for the vacation and Phil says, let me think. And then he looks at Michael. First thing out of Michael's mouth is, you're never going to see him again. that's what Michael's it was like Phil said, hey, Mike, I'm going to give Rodman 48. How long do you need? And he goes, oh, I need 48 hours. And then the first words out of Michael, you'll never see him again. 48 hours, you'll never see him. he was telling Phil Jackson, he says, you let him go, we're never going to see him again.
Well, and I think one of the most interesting things for me is that after watching this documentary and then, of course, all of the follow-up interviews that are happening.
Because there's nothing else going on.
Well, I mean,
legitimately, this is the biggest thing that sports has going right
now. It is. I mean, the NFL draft is over, which was the highest rated NFL draft in history because we're just so goddamn starved for sports, right? Think about it, guys. We're doing a sports show on Rain Man Digital right now because we all miss it so much.
Yeah.
But no, like watching all of that and like seeing Rodman, seeing all of that stuff, but like the media circus that was the Bulls is one of those things where I think it's lost a little bit over time. Because now that's every team.
Yes.
Every team has those documentarians. Every team is followed by a pod of reporters and paparazzi and everything else. Back in the day, that wasn't the deal.
No.
Like, if you think about it, even the documentaries that you see on the Pistons, all you get to see from the Bad Boys Pistons are stuff at the,
Auburn Hills?
Auburn Hills.
Yeah.
Right? That's all you see. You don't see anything like at their houses or... Yeah. Even their arriving too isn't necessarily a big fanfare. How many shots of Michael Jordan's car driving into the parking lot have we seen already?
Yeah,
well, and it's always a different car.
and that's the thing is, you know, again, Michael has had all this footage in the can for 20 plus years.
What I'm just saying is that
and
we're taking it for granted.
Oh, yeah.
because it wasn't normal.
It's not the norm. You know, there wasn't a bunch of TMZ type reporters out there trying to follow around. And, you know, what you see and what part of like the direction and everything else, even when we go to Rodman disappearing and then the Pippen situation, is that they show Michael getting asked the same fucking question 73 times
over and over and getting obviously sick of it. Yeah. It's the same thing Durant went through that last year in Golden State.
Yes.
Are you going to resign? Are you going to resign?
What are you doing? What's next year?
What's up? Huh? Oh, heard you're going to go to
I'm here today. Between, you know, he had to deal with the Rodman stuff. He had to deal with his retirement.
Right.
And he had to deal with the Pippen stuff. And so, those are like the three questions.
And the Phil Jackson stuff.
And the Phil Jackson
which I think actually goes hand in hand with his retirement stuff.
Yeah.
Right. Because after, you know, now we're 3 years removed from him playing baseball. Right. That's kind of the setup here. So we're 3 years removed. But now he's talking about retiring again because they already know that Phil's done.
Phil's leaving.
And Mike says, I'm not playing for anybody but Phil.
But Phil. Mm-hmm.
Right. Which, OK, dude, that's noble, I guess. I don't. Right. I mean, I don't know, man.
It
made sense, though, because of who Jordan is. Jordan is a creature of habit.
Now, if LeBron said, I'm not playing for you unless Tyronn Lue is my coach, guess who gets fucking hired tomorrow?
Yeah.
Tyronn Lue.
As you know, he got hired 10 minutes ago before LeBron even said
exactly.
It. Because that's how it works now. Mm-hmm. And I can't imagine a sports world. It's so weird to me to imagine a sports world where the decision hasn't happened yet. Right?
Yeah, that's
or,
true.
Or where the player says, I won't play for anybody else, and they still fire the fucking coach. He's the greatest player to ever play the game. And at that point, I don't think there was any argument there.
It's a weird flex.
It is.
It is right? A complete weird flex right? Like by the organization.
Jerry Krause is out of his goddamn mind. Reinsdorf letting him do it is out of his fucking mind. But this is why I say you can't make Krause the bad guy. Because ultimately, whose decision was it?
Yeah, Reinsdorf could have fired
Krause.
Krause at any point.
At any point. Yep. Krause didn't own the team.
Mm-hmm.
Krause had no ownership stake in the team.
So
anytime you could, and when he looks at Phil Jackson and says, you could win 82 games this year, I'm still going to fire your ass. If he wins 82 games and you fire him, someone will lynch you.
Yeah. No GM today would ever do that.
No GM would talk to Phil Jackson like that.
Yes.
It's just because here's the thing. If we've seen it time and time again, now in the last 10, 15 years, if you have a superstar player who butts head with the coach loses.
Yeah, all the time.
Mm-hmm. Every time.
Every single time.
Aaron Rodgers.
Yeah.
I think that's what the most recent example.
Yeah. Yeah. No, you definitely see that all the time. It's hard to believe that this did happen. Now, we've been talking about Phil Jackson, who is probably, you know, most of episode 4, you know, the last episode that we're going to cover. Now, he brought a completely different, you know, we hear the Zen master thing now.
Right.
But that was his mentality before. Like, I learned a lot about Phil in this too. Like, you know, going, I don't even remember where the team that he coached was that people were getting shot on the sidelines and all this shit before
it was in
Puerto Rico?
In Mexico. Was it Mexico?
I don't know.
Or somewhere? South America?
Yeah.
It was something like that. It wasn't Europe.
Yeah.
It was in South America.
It was South America or like Ecuador. I don't know, but it was fucking crazy.
And just watching his mind work as he drew the triangle and says there's 133 different ways to score out of this.
And you're like, what?
You're like, oh my gosh, this makes sense. And throughout that episode, you get this thing and he gets them through the Pistons. And then you see him coach Michael. Who's open?
Right.
You could do this all by yourself, but who's open? And Paxton. And then you watch Paxton hit 18 straight fucking points.
Right.
Like, and you're just like, and you watch Michael a click in his head that this is bigger. Now, I thought like, okay, this is a bullshit story. ESPN put up something of Kerr doing the exact same thing to Durant in the Western Conference Finals.
Right.
Going, we were sitting there and Phil looks at Jordan and goes, well, who's open? He goes, Pax, give him the fucking ball, you know, and he tells him the exact same story.
Right.
And I always love those kind of things. So where, I mean, this was a like TNT, like in the huddle type thing.
Right.
You know,
it's a true story because if anybody's going to know that story, it's Steve Kerr.
Yeah.
And if he's going to tell it to anybody, he's going to tell it to someone like Kevin Durant, who is arguably the greatest scorer of his generation.
Yeah.
And so you see this different level of. Like when Collins was there, it was more like, hey, buddy, buddy. Like everybody
Collins was very much like everybody's friends.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Everybody just get the ball to Michael.
Like it was ISO basketball.
Right.
ISO basketball.
Which is what has died in the NBA now. I mean, if you look at it, Michael Jordan rarely ever shot a 3-point shot and still led the league in scoring by like 6 points a game.
Yeah.
Right. Because he was the greatest 2-point shooter ever.
Yeah.
You had a group of guys then. Carmelo Anthony, I think, was he's the dying breed. Right. Carmelo was one of the last ones. Durant is one of those guys too, but Durant's more of a forward.
Yeah.
Yeah.
He's just fucking skinny. But, you know, if you look at it, it's crazy, like, because Jordan, of course, at the time was the leading scorer of the league for years and years and years, but couldn't get over the hump. And so everybody said he couldn't win the big one. That was the thing.
Yeah.
Jordan can't win the big one, which is what they said about, who was it, Peyton Manning?
Yeah, anybody that's good.
And anybody, I mean, at this, yeah, it's like, you know.
That's the go-to stuff. Thing.
Right.
So what they did here, like, what the documentary did that was awesome was it went like, okay, we're going to implement this offense. And then Pippen's like, I grew up a fucking point guard. This is going to work for me.
Right.
You know, and it's like, why the fuck do we need Bill Cartwright? Like, you know, I don't want to. Jordan even said it. I don't want to give Bill Cartwright the post, you know. And growing up, I remember that play was the first fucking play of every game. It's going to Bill Cartwright in the post and he's going to fucking do a little fadeaway to the right.
Yep.
You know, and that's how they set up the triangle every single time and explaining the triangle and watching, you know, these great players get better.
Right. Well, and the thing about the triangle was that you didn't have to be a great player.
Just had to move the ball.
You would still be important. Like all five guys on the field, on the court mattered. Yeah. Right.
And hence why people like PJ Armstrong, who doesn't look any different than he did when he played. Right?
He still looks like he's 4'11" and 102 pounds. You know,
Craig Hodges, Paxton, Kerr, all those guys were as great as they were because they all understood their role and did what they needed to do.
Right. Exactly. And I think that first three-peat was the quintessential triangle.
Yeah.
Right. Like, and watching it makes sense to Jordan where he realizes, wait, hold up. If we do this, all these other guys are going to get better. Okay, cool. Because I'm already great.
And I can still score 40.
Right. He's like, and I'll still get my points. Fuck it. Let me throw the rock.
Yeah.
And I think that was one of those things where when it finally clicked for him, you know, Tex Winter's offense, that's clear. Tex Winter is super important to the triangle.
Yeah.
And I know that they mentioned it in the documentary.
But they did.
But goddamn, if that wasn't a fucking slap in Tex Winter's face, because they gave almost all the credit to Phil.
To Phil. Yeah.
Fuck that. It was Tex, but that's okay. And honestly, Jerry Krause brought in Tex Winter, who then taught Phil Jackson the triangle offense. Like, that was all Krause, man. So once again, you have to go back to who's the architect of the Bulls.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, yes, you had Michael Jordan, the greatest player to ever live, but you also had Scottie Pippen on a cheap as fuck deal. You had Tex Winter's offense being run by one of the greatest coaches of all time because of the way that he talked to his players.
Yeah.
Right? Because if you can coach Michael Jordan, you can fucking coach anybody.
Anybody at that
point. This is the way it works.
Yeah.
It's kind of like being able to coach Kobe Bryant.
Yeah.
Bill Jackson.
Well, and you're right. It's just one of those things you think about it. And the cast was so much better in the second three-peat, which, you know, we'll probably be getting to in the second half of the documentary. Because Tony Kukoc was brought over as like one of the first European players.
Well, so underrated. He was a European all-star.
Yeah.
He kept playing in Europe for what, 2 years after they drafted him?
Yeah.
It's almost like the David Robinson thing where he goes off and fucking is in the Navy for 2 years before he comes back to play for the Spurs.
And I mean, Tony Kukoc at the time was like an absolute stud in the Euroleague.
Kukoc could score 30 points a game if he wanted
to. Exactly. Yeah. And, you know,
score 30 points a game if he wanted to.
And you always wonder if they didn't want to sign Pippen because of the Kukoc thing, because they had the same skill set. Kukoc was nicknamed was the waiter because he would just serve everybody.
Well, right. The thing with Kukoc was that he was the point forward.
Yeah.
Just like Scotty was.
Mm-hmm.
Scotty played more like Magic Johnson than anybody gives him credit for.
Yeah.
You know, and if you look at what he did when he went to Portland.
And he played defense.
Hey, well, yeah, exactly. Because we all know Magic Johnson, the only thing he ever defended was AIDS. And
Oh, jeez.
That's a good joke. Not a good lie. I was thinking about it when you said it.
I'm going to say it. But
I was going to say it, too. Yeah. You just said it faster.
But no, I'm just saying, like, you know, if you look at Scotty and you look at what he did when he went to Portland, I think that was kind of, and that was towards the end of his career.
Yeah.
So had he been the guy, he would have been the guy on what, 29 other teams?
Yeah.
But he wasn't because he played with Michael.
Exactly.
And so because he played with Michael, he's underrated. And I was so excited to see that third episode and even the fourth episode where they talk about Scotty's relationship with Phil.
Yeah, and the progression in his offense and everything else that we really hadn't got any kind of background on. And again, I expected all this stuff out of these first four episodes because the 30 for 30 series has been one of my favorite series to watch.
Yeah, I love it. 30
like, there hasn't been...
Dude, I listen to the podcast. I love it so
much. Yeah, there hasn't been so many, like, ones that I was like, eh, you know what? That was all right. Most of them have been good. If it's something that I'm excited about, it's probably going to be fucking good. I mean, and they've done it. And so when they said they were coming out with a 10-part docuseries on it, I was like, all right, well, ESPN is... the only kind of documentary type sports things that I really follow these days.
Well,
you know,
watch the Ken Burns stuff, right?
Yeah, but again, I mean, a lot of that stuff, again, I don't consider it as exciting as this.
No, it's boring as shit. And
because
and,
Ken Burns baseball is like 73 fucking
here's the thing.
hours.
And, guys, here's why it is not exciting for Ken Burns. Because Ken Burns
doesn't have Michael Jordan.
Well, he came out against this documentary. And here's why. This is something that came out yesterday.
Okay.
Yesterday or Friday.
Late breaking news.
What Ken Burns said was that this documentary is tainted from the start because Michael Jordan's production company is one of the producers. By giving the subject control, it is no longer a documentary, and now it's just spin.
Yeah,
he's essentially paraphrasing what he said. And to a certain degree, all documentaries are spin.
Exactly.
The difference is that Ken Burns gets to spin his own.
Exactly. And Jordan is spinning I've watched enough weed documentaries that I know that it's either going to kill me or it's going to cure fucking cancer.
Everything. Yeah. Either it's the end all be all and it'll give us fucking nuclear fusion.
Yeah.
Right. Or we're all going to die.
And you're right. It's always based on, you know, who's putting it together. So
here's the thing. Everybody has an agenda all the time.
Exactly.
And if you can.
The Fahrenheit 9/11 guys thrown off my mind.
Michael Moore.
Yeah. Of course, everything agenda been.
Right.
Supersize me. Agenda driven.
Right. God is not dead. Like all of that stuff.
Yeah. Like it doesn't matter what you I don't think there's anything wrong with agenda-driven documentaries because it's given me somebody else's view on the situation.
Well, exactly. And I think that's the thing that we forget is that we all live in this fucking bubble, right? All your social media is curated to be exactly what you believe, right?
Yeah.
Because let's be clear. Most of us believe the same shit.
Yeah.
That's why we listen to each other.
Yeah.
That's why we talk to each other. That's why our listeners listen to us because we say things they agree with. Right. But you can't just live in that bubble forever.
Yeah.
Right. Otherwise you get fucking the Civil War and, you know, just like weird shit happens when you live in that fucking bubble.
Exactly. And how can I prove that my opinion is the best opinion if I don't know what your opinion is and how shitty it is? Again, if Ken Burns wants to say that because all of a sudden he's not in the limelight for being like the guy. But again, how else are you going to get all this footage if you're not going to let Michael be involved in it somehow?
And that's the thing, because had Michael not been involved, all of this footage would have seen the light of day 25 years ago.
Exactly.
Yeah. It would have been 1999 before he came back with the Wizards. And that would have been when you see all that footage.
Yeah.
But it wasn't because Jordan had final say, which I understand. The guy has done nothing but control his own likeness his entire career.
But again, we're going to be wrapping this up here soon. But, you know, because we're basically through these first four. The fact of the matter is this. It's not like they haven't put controversial shit in.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
No, that's the thing. Like, you know, you look at this and either
the Isaiah
was
Thomas thing alone.
Right.
It has been the news story all week.
Yeah. All week. Exactly. Yeah.
Was I left off the dream team because Michael didn't like me? No, you were just a fucking asshole.
Well, no, that's exactly right. It wasn't that Michael didn't like you. It's that literally nobody
liked you. The only person that liked you apparently was Magic.
Who was it? Chuck Daly even has come out and said, no, I had no conversation
that's
with Michael
the thing
about
it.
Isaiah Thomas.
Chuck
Daly was Isaiah Thomas's fucking coach.
And he was the team coach for Team USA.
That's what I'm saying.
He didn't even give him some sort of endorsement.
Well, the thing was with Team USA, especially that first one, it was so important to have camaraderie amongst the team because it was this new situation that it's not like now where they have 2 years together.
Yeah.
Where they all practice together and then they whittle it down to 20.
And then I go to the FIFA basketball championship and then I go to this.
These guys are going to get together for a week and then they're going to go beat the shit out of Europe. Like, that was literally what happened.
And honestly, if, again, this is off subject, John Stockton and Magic Johnson were the point guards.
Right.
Yeah. Isaiah Thomas is not better than John Stockton and Magic Johnson.
He's not better than Magic. I think there is an argument to say that he may, at the time, have been better than John Stockton.
But again, you're dealing with the guy who probably was leading the league in assists at that time or up there, and that's what they needed. They didn't need
And they also had Karl Malone.
Yeah.
Right? And you got to think, there was no one else on Detroit was going.
Yeah.
Okay? And then with Magic, though, too, Magic had not been playing because of the AIDS thing. The HIV thing, right?
No, this was before AIDS.
Was that before the HIV thing?
This was before.
Okay. 92 was before AIDS, yeah. AIDS wasn't a thing then.
No, I mean, AIDS was a thing. It wasn't his thing.
Oh, wait.
Right. He wasn't.
I thought he invented AIDS.
No, he was injecting cash straight into his veins to get it over.
Greatest South Park.
Right, isn't it?
It was pixie dust.
Yes, pixie dust. But no, I mean, I'm just saying, like, I think there's an argument to be made that possibly Isaiah Thomas should have gone in front of John Stockton. But here's the thing. Everybody loves John Stockton. No one has anything bad to say about him.
Yeah.
And if that's the case, that's the guy that gets to go.
Yeah.
So 1991, he had AIDS, right?
Yeah, dude. I fucking told you. He had quit the NBA at that point. I was right, bitch. Ha ha.
I did not know it was that long ago.
There's weird shit that I remember, Bobby, for no reason. I was 9 when he quit the NBA. And I remember because it was such a big deal because no one knew anything about AIDS in my grade. That's what I remember was that, like, no, because, like, AIDS, of course, happened in the 80s, right? And you had some big names die from AIDS, you know, Freddie Mercury and the like. But then when when Magic Johnson got it, you were like, oh shit, I know who that is.
Yeah, November 1st, 1991.
Yep. And I remember that. And then I remember when he came back, how everybody was freaked out that they were going to catch AIDS. But so that's why I remember weird shit. But yeah, no, either way. So Magic hadn't even been playing and got picked. Because once again, everybody likes Magic Johnson.
Exactly. But the fact of the matter is this, that, you know, Jordan hasn't been like a fluff piece.
No, not at all. And even Jordan admitted, like, he's worried.
Yeah,
he was worried that people are going to be like, oh, they're not going to understand my assholeness. Like, that's literally what it is.
Ronnie, do your shit, Ronnie. Right? Come on, Ronnie. He's yelling at Ron Harper the whole time. Like,
right? Like, Ron fucking Harper, who's arguably, like, one of the nicest dudes ever.
Yeah. You know, get your shit together, Ron.
Right?
Like, and yelling at people on the bench. Like, he's showing all this stuff. The Isaiah Thomas thing was like, this guy's a fucking asshole.
Right. When he said that, dude, I was floored.
Let me show you the video of what he said. He's going to fucking lie.
You know? And then he watches it and he goes, yep, lied.
You know, he was concerned about today, not what it was back then. He's going to lie. Yep, that's exactly what he said.
Yeah, exactly. He's still an asshole.
Again, it's not like they've...
they haven't pulled any punches, honestly.
No, you know, you see the gambling, you see the booze, you see everything that's going on in the background. They're not hiding things here.
I think it's one of those things, too, where... Because this is a documentary, it could have gone either way. You could make Michael Jordan look like the bad guy.
Oh, always.
Right? Or you could make him look like a saint. They've done neither. Now, does he look more like a saint than he might have been? Maybe. Or does he look more like an asshole than he might have been? Maybe. I don't know.
I think it all matters. Again, I think all four of us in this room are Michael Jordan fans.
Oh, absolutely.
So we're going to take this as, oh my God, he's so fucking great. Look at him. Like, look at the drive.
Sure.
I bet you if we found some Celtic fans or Laker fans or Pistons fans and brought them in the room, they'd be like, God damn, that guy was a cocksucker.
Right? Well, it's kind of like all those people that hate on Kobe.
Yeah.
Because of Kobe's drive.
Yeah.
Right? Oh, Kobe was such an asshole to his teammates.
It's because Kobe shot 73 times. That's why.
Yeah. No. Yeah. Okay. You shoot 73 times. Dude, your arm will fucking fall off. Like, I've gone to the gym and I've played basketball alone for 2 hours and I can't lift my arm above my head
for
2 days.
But
I'm 38 years old.
I think that's the thing, though. It's always going to be your perspective on the team or anything else. Yeah. Like, absolutely. You could put anything Red Sox up for me, and I'll be like, they're fucking... Curt Schilling sock was fake. They're fucking cheaters. You know? Like, but that's my attitude because I'm fucking from New York, and it's in my fucking blood.
And that makes sense. It's the same way I hate the White Sox.
Yeah, and so I think whether you're a Bulls fan or not is how you look at this documentary. But they are also giving you both of those sides, so you can make that choice on yourself.
I think that as sports fans, and I think all of us at some point or another played a sport. Bob, I know you still do the softball thing, right? And you're pretty fucking good at it. Tony, you played sports back in the day, right?
Yeah, I played baseball in high school.
Right. David?
Played basketball, played football.
Right, okay. And of course, I played sports too. And so we understand that competitive nature.
Yeah.
And so when we see Jordan pushing his teammates, that's not him being an asshole to us because we played sports.
Well,
yeah.
Well,
so I think people that didn't play sports and didn't have that kind of team, like the team mentality or golfers, like... You know what I mean? Like, it's different for them, I think, than it would be for a lot of us that did play sports.
Well, the amazing thing, though, is like also hearing the fact that, yeah, you see him yelling at Ron Harper, but Ron Harper's like, okay, whatever.
No, Ron Harper understood that he needed to do better.
Well, he understood.
It's always one of those things when you are, again, like I played baseball on hardball till I was 30.
Right.
You know, and people would ask me all the time, they're like, how can you hit as well as you do? Well, I'm the best fucking player on this field. And when you figure that out, you'll be too.
Right.
You know, because it's a mentality inside of me that like,
every time you step on the court, on the field
or whatever you do,
you have to believe you're the best.
I am the fucking best. Right. And that's, I mean, it ain't no different than when I get behind this fucking mic or anything else.
Exactly.
That is my mentality of like, look, if I'm not, you know, again, my hosting skills have grown over these 5 years. When I first, could I get behind the mic and lead a show? No, but this is what I want to do. And I fucking worked at it. Mm-hmm. And baseball was the same way. I mean, I've won technically a world championship in softball. I have a fucking ring. And I remember sitting there with like 300 or 400 people in the stands looking at me going, yeah, you guys should all watch me. I'm the best fucking player out here.
Right.
You know, well, but that was my attitude towards this. And I see a lot of that in the way Jordan acts. It's like, mm-hmm. I am going to work harder than you. I'm going to be better than you. And if I'm not better than you, I'm going to be fucking smarter than you.
So,
and I'm going to fucking smoke you any way I can.
I had a coach a long, long time ago, and he flat out told me that I would never be the most talented person on the field. And he was fucking right. I was never the most talented. Yeah. But then he said, but you better fucking work harder than everyone else because you're already at a disadvantage. And I'll be honest with you. Did it hurt when he said it? Did I cry? You best believe I went home that day after practice, sat in the fucking bathtub with the shower hit me in the face until the water went cold, crying my fucking eyes out because I was destroyed that my coach thought I sucked at baseball.
Yeah.
I was destroyed. But you know what? I went back the next day, an hour beforehand to hit that fucking batting cage.
Yeah.
And I went in 2 hours before every game to field extra practice, to hit more. God, I'm getting all fucking...
No,
it was such a big deal. Like,
it is.
Oh, yeah,
it was a turning point because I'd always been told, oh, you're awesome. You're awesome. You're awesome. You're awesome. The first coach that ever actually fucking sat me down was like, you fucking suck. And he didn't say it like that. He said it in a way to motivate me.
Yeah.
But man, I tell you what, there was a completely different attitude towards any game. It didn't matter what the game was, playing Magic the Gathering competitively. Every time I sit down, I'm the best fucking player. I know, Bob, you're laughing at me.
No, I'm not. I was picking up a bottle.
Okay. But I'm just right in your face, buddy.
In your face. I don't give a shit.
But no, I'm just saying, even playing, you know, competitive Magic, every time I sit down at the table, I don't give a fuck who's across from me. I'm better.
Yeah.
Every single time, that's how I feel. I'm smarter. I might not have more practice at Magic, I'll be honest, because I don't. I want, but I promise you, I know better.
Yeah.
You know, and so it's the same thing. Sports are the same thing. Chess, whatever you're playing. If you don't believe you're the best, you're fucked. You're mm-hmm. fucked. It's just that simple. You don't win.
And I think that's what they're doing a good job of showing.
Yes.
That man has some drive because he did go through those same types of things where, you know, again, in the first episode, they showed he was cut and everything else. Right. And that's always happened. But then again, I'm not the strongest man putting on 15 pounds of muscle. I need to do this better. I got my teammates involved, you know, and he's evolved over this. So these first four episodes have been outstanding for me. Again, we will cover the last six. Do we all agree to that?
Yes.
Oh, absolutely.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
Honestly, dude, it could be a complete dumpster fire for the last six, and I still say we cover it so that we can bitch about it.
Yeah exactly. Because, again, I mean, this is legitimately the biggest thing that's going on in sports right now.
Absolutely. I mean, I don't know.
And this would have been the biggest thing going on in sports in June or July, whenever they were originally going to show it.
Well, absolutely.
Because I've been looking forward to this since they did do the whole – okay, there's Pippen, there's Jordan, there's Rodman. And it was such a good like trailer of all these people that are going to talk through this thing. And then Justin Timberlake shows up and Obama.
That one made me laugh.
The Obama thing actually made sense.
Because he's from Chicago.
He's from Chicago.
Yeah. So I get that. But man, I tell you what, watching Rodman talk, I think was the my big takeaway.
Yeah.
Was just how basketball smart. His basketball IQ is off the charts. And I had no idea. I thought he was all just the circus sideshow that could rebound really well.
Yeah, no, definitely.
That's honestly what I thought. And I think that, you know, so I think that from that standpoint, the documentary surprised me in that it gave me something I never would have thought.
Yeah.
Right. And like you said, Bob, I think that they're framing it very well, where it shows why. It shows a lot of the why, you know, what drove Michael. What drove Scott?
Exactly.
What drove Phil?
Those things that I questioned at the beginning all make sense now because they're setting it up.
Right, exactly. Like, yeah, the setup on this has been fantastic.
Yes.
Yes, did it feel a little bit slow because it was giving me a bunch of information I already knew? Sure.
Sure.
That happens all the time.
But again, as the professional critics in the room, we've all seen this shit before. We understand that it's not always made for the people that know the industry or know movies or know television better than anybody. This is for, again, the uninitiated to the Bulls.
This isn't like, you know, the second Lord of the Rings movie where if you didn't watch the first one, you fucked.
Yeah.
Like, this is straight up. If you didn't see the Bulls in the 90s, it doesn't matter.
Doesn't matter.
You're still going to get not necessarily the same thing, but you'll get a great documentary.
You'll get an understanding.
Yeah, definitely. And I think let's go around the room real quick. What are you expecting for the last six episodes, Brian?
I think we're going to see more of the supporting cast.
Uh-huh.
I think they're going to bring in, I think Curl talk a little bit more, honestly, because I think he's one of the most recognizable. That's like of those guys.
Yeah.
You know, because everybody knows Steve Kerr coaches the fucking Golden State Warriors. Right.
Yep.
And so we'll see Kerr more. I think I'm hoping that we see Phil more, get a little bit more of Phil's thoughts and stuff. And I'd like to get into almost Michael's psyche when they were on that horrible start to the 97 season.
Okay.
That horrible start where Pippen's out. They haven't figured out who the fuck they are yet without Pippen. And the team almost looks like they're fucking imploding.
Yeah.
Right.
And then they started like 7-9 or something like that.
It was 9-7 or something. Yeah. And then they had like their ninth loss. They were like 13-9 or something.
Yeah. Their 11th loss was like.
Like 6 months before the 11th loss.
Yeah, the
year before. Or no, they didn't even lose 11 the year before because that was the
73-10. Yeah.
Yeah. 72-10.
Sorry.
Yeah. The 72-10. Yeah. 73-9 goes to
the other
Golden State Cheaters. And I'm sorry. Did you get to sign Kevin Durant with that fucking lineup and not be considered a goddamn cheater? That's ridiculous. Fucking salary cap.
So that you're just looking for more insight to the side cast.
Yeah, more. I want more insight into the side cast, honestly, because I think that's the meat. That's the potatoes. We've got the meat. I want the potatoes.
Okay. Tony?
I'm looking forward to, a couple obvious things. The return of Pippen from his injury list when he comes back into the team and how he, how he reestablishes his role with the team. I'm interested in more. I want to say there's more. Trying to remember, there were more episodes with just dealing with Rodman, but I'm fascinated with how, towards the end of the season, the Bulls finally just click. They just finally, by the time the season's over, they're clicking. Everyone's expecting them to win the championship. But at the same time, in the back, the more and more this season progresses, the more and more it starts to be obvious that, hey, this is it. Like Jerry Krause said, I don't care if you win 82 games. Phil's gone. And so whatever's going to happen, we're going to be seeing a lot more revealed, behind the scenes. Because I also got out from the four episodes was that there was already, their feeling behind the scenes of how things were progressing and how the front office, how the relationship with the front office and everything like that. I'm looking forward to the future episodes in which it finally clicks to most of them, especially even Michael, that, hey, this is it.
Right.
Because
you're right, because these first four episodes, it doesn't really feel like Michael thinks this is his last hurrah.
No.
No, I think as we progress towards the end of this, we're going to see and we're going to hear actual statements of their feelings of how,
got shafted.
Yeah, exactly.
All right. So, David,
just like Brian, I'm really interested to see more about the I hate calling them the side characters, but the supporting cast,
the other teammates.
I want to see more of them.
actually coming forth, especially Tony Kukoc.
The other five guys that played on the team?
I think they only ran eight guys out. Yeah. I think that gets overlooked as Tony's contribution to that final season, because when Pippen was gone, Tony Kukoc had to be there. and I think that gets overlooked a lot. But also as the series goes on, as strange as it sounds, yes, we have this villain that we basically, everyone is zeroed on. It's all Krause's fault, right? But as the series goes on, I really want to see more about the front office side of it, because it is a very interesting thought process of thinking of what basketball was like back then. I mean, the salary cap back then pales in comparison of what, like, you know, front offices have to deal with today. And a lot of people might say that, well, the front offices back then had more restrictions. And you look at today's world, everyone's free. You could do whatever you want. You could build that super team. Back then, you could never build a super team.
No superstar ever thought about leaving their team. No superstar ever did.
Because, and this is something that
unless they were traded.
Well, and that was the whole thing. It was never. I'm going to join up with you. I'm going to beat you. Yeah. That was always because, like, Michael never would have played with Isaiah Thomas on the same team.
Absolutely.
Michael never would have played with Bird on. That's why the Dream Team was such a big deal.
Because they all decided
that
to work
together. That would
never
happen. You know, if you look at the Lakers, they had Worthy, they had Magic, they had Kareem, but that was organically made.
Yeah.
Right? If you look at the Bulls with Pippen and the Celtics. Rodman, and that was organic to a degree. Rodman essentially was a cast off that nobody wanted.
Yeah, he wasn't the superstar that we think of today.
Right. If you look at like the Supersonics with Kemp and Peyton, right? Like that was a super team.
A super tandem.
Yeah. Like it was normal to have two guys on a team.
Yeah.
To have three.
Drexler, Porter.
Right.
You know, exactly. It was always two teams, you know, right. KJ Barkley, you know, you kind of went through those type of things where it was always two. It was never four.
Right. Or if even it looked like Glenn Robinson and Ray Allen.
Yeah.
In Milwaukee, which.
That's more or less like the insight that I want to see further on in the series. It's like what the front office had to deal with during that time, because it does suck. Yes, Krause is dead. We will never know his side of the story.
No, I don't think that's true, though, because we do have quite a bit of his side of the story. I believe there's a 60 Minutes episode that he did.
Yeah, I mean, when you look at it, they are bringing up old ESPN things. They have hit the footage.
Really quick, I wonder how he felt seeing all those cameras watching everything.
Oh, he probably was pissed.
No, I don't think he was, because here's the thing. He still had 6 rings.
Yeah.
And he still had his millions.
He wanted to be a star too.
And he knew that, because I don't think that guy ever turned down an interview.
No.
I think anytime somebody called for an interview, he was like, fuck yeah.
I got shit to say.
Right? He's like, oh yeah, I'm a fat, chubby little dude, but you best believe I am the architect of the Chicago Bulls.
So like,
that's him. What are you thinking, Bobby?
I want to know what is, one, I want to see what the, I want them to go to like Malone and Stockton. And talk to them.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
I want to know if it was really a flu game or it was a hangover game.
Oh, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Because that has always been
the rumor.
And so, you know, shit like that, because if we keep jumping back and forth and everything else, I want to hear those type of stories that are
the shove off.
The shove off. Shit like that. Yeah. I want to hear Russell go, yeah, he fucking pushed me.
Right? Right? That's exactly what I mean. Like, I think that that's one of those things that we might actually get. Yeah. And I will say this too, that there was that whole thing with Ron Harper talking about how he should have been the one guarding Jordan.
Yeah.
Craig Elo.
Yeah.
Did you see it?
Yeah.
Elo comes out and he's like, what the fuck, Ron? You weren't even a defensive guy. You were our scorer. I was our defensive guy. Of course I guarded Jordan, and I guarded him well, you fucking prick. Like,
but I think that's the kind of stuff that I want to hear and see, because again, there is repercussions that are coming out of this.
It's like
Sunday happens, and then the new Monday morning quarterback is the repercussions from the documentary.
You're absolutely right, and I think it's been interesting that there's been so much attention paid to this.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And honestly, if it was out in June or July,
it wouldn't have happened.
It would have a lot of the same attention, because what the fuck else do we have in June and July?
Yeah, we're
getting a hockey season? Who gives a shit?
The dog days of baseball are starting.
Exactly. It's like baseball. They're in the middle of the season. Half the teams are already eliminated. You know, the other half, you know, they're going to win their division.
But now you got 100% of the eyes on you.
Right, exactly. And I think that it's been amazing to see a lot of these older guys, like the Craig Elos, Ron Harper.
Just see like Bill Wennington and
like giving the new interviews that they're giving now. Like, yeah, he showed up on WKJG in Tulsa. Like the fuck?
Yeah.
And then it's like national news that he was on some Tulsa radio station.
And this whole last week watching Isaiah Thomas just fucking backpedal.
Oh, yeah, right.
Oh, dude, like, it's been interesting. Blah, blah, blah.
And here's the thing about Isaiah Thomas, guys. So you guys remember the CBA.
Uh-huh.
Right? So the Continental Basketball Association has a team in Fort, they had a team in Fort Wayne, right? The Fort Wayne Fury, which I used to go to games all the time. At one point, Master P played for them, right? That was their big thing. Well, Isaiah Thomas bought essentially the CBA and then destroyed it. And that's how the G League started. But not really. Like Isaiah Thomas had nothing to do with the G League. All he did was Vince McMahon, the CBA.
Yeah.
That's all he did. And so fuck him. He literally put hundreds of basketball players out of work. So fuck that guy.
I don't know. But again, so far, I think we are all very intrigued and looking forward to these last six episodes. So hopefully if you guys are listening, you're watching along. If not, and you just like to listen to us talk, you can always listen to us talk on RaymanDigitalMedia.com. That's where you'll catch any past and future episodes. And thank you for listening to this Critique Revolve.
Carova Milk Bar sold Milk Plus. Milk Plus Velocet, or Synthomesque, or Drencrum, which is what we were drinking. This would sharpen you up and make you ready for a bit of the old ultraviolence.